Hello, I'm Peter Goodwin, reporting from London. Millions of premature deaths could be avoided all over the world each year by taking action to combat climate change. This is according to scientific investigations published in a special edition of the medical journal The Lancet, launched at a joint briefing held by satellite link simultaneously in London and Washington. Sarah Maxwell.
The editor of The Lancet, Richard Horton, made it quite clear that if you reduce greenhouse gas emissions, you can save lives.
The message to the public is, if we act on climate change, you are going to live a better life, a healthier life, a happier life for you and for your children over the next 20 or 30 years. And that is a wonderful future to look forward to.
The Lancet publication is the result of a massive effort from a number of medical experts. It predicts what's likely to happen to health over the next few decades if targets for combating global warming are successfully met, rather than not changing current policies. Andy Haynes, director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, told us what the study consists of.
The study that we've done covers urban land transport, household energy, electricity generation and food and agriculture. And in those four sectors, we've looked at policies and strategies that could bring benefits to health over and above those achieved by reducing climate change. So let me give you one example. If we use less coal to generate electricity, if we use cleaner sources of energy, including renewable energy and other types of energy sources that don't use so much fossil fuels, then we can reduce air pollution. Reducing air pollution, particularly fine particles, will benefit health at the same time as preventing greenhouse gas emissions.
Although it's costly to switch away from coal and fossil fuels to renewable energy sources and nuclear power, Anil Markandia from the Basque Centre for Climate Change in Bilbao, Spain, said his research found that some of these costs are mitigated by lower healthcare costs. That's because millions of people are saved from ill health and premature death if you meet the recommended greenhouse gas targets.
The costs of achieving the global targets is less than you might think if you look only at the direct costs, because there are these important co-benefits. These health benefits are an important factor which we have to take into account.
Dr. Markandia's team made a predictive model in which the recommendations for controlling emissions were applied to the European Union, India and China. It turned out that very big savings in healthcare costs are predicted for India, slightly lesser savings in China, and the least savings of all were in the EU. But even in Europe, these healthcare cost savings were significant. So is there a case for saying these co-benefits can make a big impact on the overall budget for preventing climate change?
Yes, there is. In some cases, the costs are reduced by a great deal. In fact, we don't find that the costs go down to zero. There is still a small cost, but it can be very small of achieving the climate targets.
Anil Markandia from Spain. The London-Washington meeting also heard that large amounts of energy are wasted in the home. Sarah Maxwell.
A research group at the London School of Hygiene has shown that improving the energy efficiency of homes in the UK could prevent more than 5,000 premature deaths each year. In India, the priority was different, but perhaps even more compelling. Paul Wilkinson explained that smoky indoor cooking stoves there are deadly, and yet $50 could provide each family with an efficient stove to prevent more than 500,000 deaths annually. So what did he think we can learn from his study findings?
What we hope is that people will take away from this the idea that acting in ways that improve energy efficiency and help meet climate change targets will also bring benefits to health, and the two things together therefore may persuade, we hope, governments and others in authority to take the decisions to implement these sorts of policies at an accelerated pace.
Paul Wilkinson from the London School.
And another group at the school has been looking at health benefits from changing policies on urban transport. James Woodcock said humans are naturally equipped with ideal personal transportation devices, our legs. And his study found that if we walk and cycle more, we emit fewer greenhouse gases than when driving, while at the same time staying more healthy. What, though, did he think we should all make of this?
We hope that this will inform policymakers that there has been too much focus on low-emission motor vehicles. Well, the bicycle is a great low-emission vehicle. People's bodies are very well designed for walking. If they don't, then they suffer the health consequences in terms of cardiovascular disease. There's also effects on depression. There's also effects on dementia, on breast cancer. Policymakers need to start preparing for big increases in walking and cycling and invest in the infrastructure that pedestrians and cyclists need and prioritise the needs of pedestrians and the cyclists over those of motorists.
Cars, James Woodcock told us, make us less likely to take exercise. And even if you design them to have lower emissions, this still makes far less difference to global warming than not using them at all. And he wasn't impressed by the argument that some people wouldn't want to use a bike. Elegant women, for example.
If you look at Copenhagen, you will see many very elegantly well-dressed ladies cycling around in high heels. I mean, there's actually a big push at the moment to present cycles chic and that people can look well-dressed and stylish and still ride a bicycle.
James Woodcock from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine.
Alan Dangor at the London School has investigated the impact of agricultural and food policies on health. His study found that livestock production makes a massive contribution to climate change. Not only that, if we eat too much meat, we can die prematurely from things like heart disease. His study concluded that rich countries should reduce livestock production.
The only way to meet that greenhouse gas emissions target is to cut the production of livestock. So we're saying that if you reduce livestock production by about 30%, you would then be able to meet your targets for greenhouse gas emissions by 2030.
But can his ideas be implemented in countries like Great Britain, where apparently adult males eat on average nearly a kilo and a half of meat each week?
We're saying we need to be much more rational about how much animal source food we're eating. Do we really need to eat 1.5 kilos of meat or meat products a week? Is that necessary? We can survive perfectly well and perfectly happily. Lots of people on the planet eat much less meat than us and are happy, and it's perfectly conceivable to eat a little bit less. We're saying have smaller portions of meat or meat products and dairy products or eat it less frequently.
Alan Dangor.
Finally, Andy Haynes of the London School summed up, and before him, Richard Horton, editor of The Lancet.
Instead of climate change being an incredible loss, you have to invest vast amounts of money in order to get any benefit. We're all going to have to change our lifestyles. Actually, that's the wrong message. Acting on climate change is going to deliver us an incredible gain. And I think that has the potential to transform the whole political debate about climate change and create a public demand for political action instead of, at the moment, the public resisting political action.
The take-home message is that it's not all doom and gloom when it comes to climate change. Of course, if climate change is left unchecked, it will have adverse effects on health. But there's also an upside to all this, and that is that there are health benefits that could be gained really in the near term as a result of a number of strategies that we can put in place to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So we can get a health dividend as a result of these strategies, as well as actually preventing climate change itself.
Andy Haynes, Director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And we'll be back with more health dividends in audio news from the London School very soon. Until then, from Sarah Maxwell and from me, Peter Goodwin, goodbye.